is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. House Republicans appear to have the votes to hand President Trump a big win for the mega budget and spending bill. The vote along party lines after House leaders and the president wrangled the no votes into support, but that vote's still going on. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he had the votes to win, though. Democrats were also unified in opposing the sweeping package that includes cuts to programs like Medicaid to pay for tax breaks.
I yield back.
Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries delayed the final vote, speaking on the House floor for 8 hours and 44 minutes, setting a new record. But it's maybe only a delay.
The bill would extend and expand the 2017 tax cuts and hugely ramp up spending on border security and immigration enforcement. Republican holdouts dropped their objections overnight. Congressional Budget Office estimates some 12 million Americans could lose their coverage as a result of changes in the bill to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. Again, that vote, they appear to have the votes to pass it. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. The months-long biennial budget process in Wisconsin is complete. At 1:32 a.m. Thursday, Governor Tony Evers signed the budget bill now known as 2025 Act 15 into law. The bill passed the state Senate late Wednesday evening.
There are 19 ayes, 14 noes, and the bill is passed.
Then it was the Assembly's turn voting after midnight.
There are 59 ayes and 39 noes. Senate Bill 45 is concurred in.
The Assembly gaveled out at 12:49 a.m. Thursday, capping a marathon session to finish the state legislature's end of the budget process.
Wisconsin State Assembly is adjourned.
The budget bill passed with bipartisan support in both chambers. Assembly Representative and co-chair of the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee, Mark Bourne, said that this year's budget came about the same way as other recent budget bills.
Every budget that has come through this committee since Governor Evers has been in office has been a bipartisan budget because Republicans have crafted most of it, which is still true with this document, and the governor has signed it.
Governor Evers said after signing the bill that he never seriously considered vetoing the entire budget, as it would have jeopardized over $1 billion in health care funding, as well as investments in child care, special education reimbursement, the UW system, and infrastructure. Evers issued 23 partial vetoes, several of them due to a lack of funding provided for the Nelson Knowles Stewardship Program. In signing the bill, Evers said that the compromise between both parties in the legislature, along with the governor's office, led to the creation of a bipartisan budget. 7 Democrats in the Assembly and 5 in the Senate voted to pass the budget. 4 Republicans in the Senate and 1 in the Assembly voted against the bill. Evers touted the impact that the budget will have on families and said, quote, "The budget is proof of what we can all accomplish when we put politics aside." The final price tag on the budget is $111.1 billion. The full budget bill and veto message is available on our website at civicmedia.us. Download the free Civic Media app now at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Bucks release another player. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Basketball, the Bucks have waived backup center Chris Livingston after just 2 years with the team. Livingston, drafted by the Bucks in 2023, and was the highest paid player taken in the second round of the NBA draft. The move seen as a way for the team to get under the salary cap. Baseball, the Brewers face the Mets tonight in New York with a series win on the line. Last night, the crew lost to the Mets 7-3 after rookie Jacob Mizorowski gave up a grand slam in the second inning. Manager Pat Murphy.
He learned his lesson. He's ticked about it. Even some of his sequencing he's ticked about. He's just really in a good spot in that, darn it, why did this happen? You know what I mean? Like, I could have. And it's like, he can see it. There's just a really fine line between being dominant and being just okay. And I'm certain he'll learn from it.
The Brewers won game one of yesterday's doubleheader, 7-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be a hot and humid couple of days. Today, sunny with a chance of an isolated thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Our high today, 88. Tonight, upper 60s. The 4th of July will be sunny, hot, and humid with a high of 91. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 89.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, happy 4th of July. We have a specially curated Matinair on air for you, but Free Ticket Fridays is happening. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our fantastic engineer and producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It is 6 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock on this Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Welcome in, everybody, here at the world headquarters of the old CM. Civic Media. Nobody calls it CM, but I'll call it CM.
Yeah, not really.
I sound like Trump now. Nobody calls it CM. I just thought of a new thing. Call it Civic
Nobody
Media.
Nobody calls it CM for Civic Media.
That's pretty good.
It's a shame.
Mostly clear skies, blue skies here in downtown Madison, a block away from the state capitol where the midnight oil was burning and then some. Last night, state budget was passed by the assembly in the wee hours of the morning. Apparently, somebody made a lot of popcorn for Robin Voss, and he said, I need to eat that, so let's pass. No, he didn't. I'm joking around. You understand? I'm joking around. Our very own Dan Schaefer, our civic media political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, as well as our news director, Shally Pittman, and Jimmy Cuska from our news department, all on top of it last night. Here's what happened, Zommers. I was watching Colbert, a rerun, and I fell asleep in my chair, and I woke up, and there were reruns of Seinfeld on, and it was like, I don't know, 12:45, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, I better check it. And I just, as I woke up, here's Schaefer and Shally Pittman and Jimmy Cuska, all, they'd stayed up the whole time. And I think the governor signed passed the budget and immediately walked it over to Governor Evers' office in the East Wing. And Governor Evers signed it, I believe, 1:32 a.m., 1:31 a.m. Schaefer will have it because he was up and doing it. So we have a new state budget. A lot of people unhappy. Some people happy. There are winners and losers in these things politically. Winners and losers in terms of Wisconsinites. We're going to break it all down with Dan Schaefer here at the bottom, just after the bottom of the hour, because he understands, Zommers, this state budget process, it can be a bit discombobulating.
It can be extremely discombobulating.
So we'll recombobulate with Dan Schaefer at the bottom of the hour. Also coming up today, a holiday edition in hour two of What's Worse, Sparklers or Fireworks?
Or Firecrackers.
Firecrackers, thank you. Sparklers or Firecrackers, we'll discuss that in hour two on the lighter side. Also, if you don't like politics, that's okay. We got you covered on today's show. And this is real. Red Panda has taken a fall with a major injury. Hopefully she'll be okay. Anybody who's gone to a sporting event, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. The woman who's on the big unicycle and balances like 1,000 teacups and flips around.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. For a second, when you said Red Panda, I thought you were going to say, like, the Red Panda, its
no.
endangered species status has changed.
There's only one Red Panda.
No, I understand.
And she is, I believe she's recuperating So we'll check in on that as well. And but we're going to begin with just moments ago, or about a half an hour plus ago, broke across the news headlines here. This by the Associated Press: House Republicans propelled President Donald Trump's $4.5 trillion tax breaks and spending cut bill to final congressional passage within the last hour, overcoming multiple setbacks to approve his signature second-term policy package before the 4th of July deadline. By the way, I'll editorialize, that was a made-up deadline. He didn't have to do it by then. But Trump said he wanted it done by then, so they said, well, we got to get it done by then. And by the way, it was dueling budgets last night, Zobbers, at 1 a.m. or early this morning. You had the state budget going on, and then you had the federal budget going on. Like four holdouts. One of them, Fitzpatrick, he voted no on the procedural, so it couldn't move along, and then he took off. And Johnson had to round him up. I'm not kidding. This is real. And we're going to get into this with Dan Schaefer a little bit, but it was a little surreal watching both of these budget processes happening in real time early this morning, because the state budget, the state of Wisconsin, they were, the legislature and the governor were trying to beat the clock and get the state budget passed and signed into law before the federal budget. Why is that? Again, Schaefer will help us walk through it. But essentially, there were monies for for hospitals and reimbursements available at the federal level. But if Wisconsin hadn't passed their budget and signed it into law before the federal budget was passed and signed into law, we would have missed out on all kinds of reimbursement monies. So yes. There was this beat the clock thing going on last night.
If you got a rebate for something, but there's a time limit on it, they had to get it in for the time limit for the rebate, or they weren't going to get their money.
Right. Save 11%. Save big money at Menards. It's always on. It's like, oh, you got to do it. It's always 11%. Anyway.
At Menards, yes.
Yes, exactly. So back to the story, the AP Wire, the federal budget, the tight roll call about an hour ago, 218 to 214. Came at a potentially high political cost, with two Republicans joining all Democrats opposed. Republican leaders worked overnight, the president himself leaning on a handful of skeptics to drop their opposition and send the bill to him to sign into law. Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York delayed voting by holding the floor for more than 8 hours with a record-breaking speech against the bill. I thought he did a great job. I didn't see the whole 8 hours, obviously. But I want to play you a couple of these cuts of Hakeem Jeffries, because I think he made a couple of really great points. First one, Hakeem Jeffries, early this morning into later morning, calling this federal budget bill of Donald Trump's and the Republicans immoral. Here is Hakeem Jeffries on the House floor.
You see, budgets are moral documents. And in our view, Mr. Speaker, budgets should be designed to lift people up. This reckless Republican budget that we are debating right now on the floor of the House of Representatives tears people down. This reckless Republican budget is an immoral document. And everybody should vote no against it, because of how it attacks children and seniors and everyday Americans and people with disabilities. This reckless Republican budget is an immoral document. And that is why I stand here on the floor of the House of Representatives with my colleagues in the House Democratic Caucus, yes, to stand up and push back against it with everything we have, yes, on behalf of the American people.
Democratic leader of the House, Hakeem Jeffries, if you've never been involved in politics, you don't fully appreciate how hard it is to keep your caucus together. In other words, everybody in your party, to get them to vote unanimously on something. It ain't easy, believe me. And for leader Jeffries to be able to do that, super impressive, number one. Number two, I think his speech, you could take cuts of this and run against Republican MAGA incumbents next fall, and it's going to come back to haunt him. By the way, our friend, our colleague, Jane Matt Nair, Great program every morning from 9 until 11. By the way, Jane and Greg Bach and I are going to be on the road here in a couple of weeks. Oshkosh Bagosh up in Butternut and Hayward, going to be on the road. Cannot wait for that. Jane texts in, and I'm glad she's reminding me to say this. And she's absolutely right. Because what Jeffries just said about this bill being immoral, going to get more into Medicaid cuts in a minute. These cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, better known as food stamps, many, if not most, they don't kick in until January of 2027. 2 months after the midterm. So this, I mean, if I didn't care, which I do, but if I didn't care, I'd say, wow, this is politically beautiful. Because what this does is this passes, Trump's going to sign it into law apparently tomorrow. And so this allows the MAGA Republican congressional incumbents to travel around their districts and say, so where are these cuts? Where are these cuts? You know, the libs kept ginning things up, lying. There's no cuts. Have you seen any cuts? And people are going to say, no, we haven't seen them. Until January of 2027. And then if the Democrats are able to take the House of Representatives and things go to hell, then MAGA and Trump are going to say, see, this is what happens when you elect Democrats to put them in charge. I mean, it's politically beautiful. I'm not going to lie about that.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It's a politically beautifully written bill for political expediency. It's absolutely destructive. Americans are going to die. Nursing homes are going to close. Already had one, I think it was in Nebraska. I think Jane Gregory was talking about this morning. Saw it a couple other places. One nursing home has already said they're going to close down because of this. And when I say people are going to die, no, it's not hyperbole. This comes from a lot of different places. The fact of the matter is there's going to be thousands of people that lose their health care, probably hundreds of thousands, not millions of people lose their health care coverage in this country because of this bill. But the way it's been written, much of the pain will be pushed off. So, We'll see about that. Have we got time for a little bit of the second Jeffries cut, Sommers? All right, here's Hakeem Jeffries talking about these Medicaid cuts on the House floor.
It's extraordinary to me that as a result of this one big ugly bill, this all-out assault on health care in this country, millions of people are going to lose coverage, thrown off of health care, set in motion a chain of events where hospitals will close, nursing homes will shut down, people unable to get the care that they need to live a life of dignity and respect. And that as a result of the all-out Republican assault on health care in the United States of America, people will die. Tens of thousands, perhaps year after year after year, as a result of the Republican assault on the health care of the American people. I'm sad. I never thought that I'd be on the House floor saying that this is a crime scene. And House Democrats want no part of it. No part of it.
House Speaker Hakeem Jeffries on Medicaid cuts, calling it a crime scene. He's not wrong. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont tweeting this out. 16 million Americans will lose their health care they currently have under Trump's quote-unquote big beautiful bill. How many will lose their health care in your state if it passes? This is interesting, but tragic. According to Senator Sanders' numbers that he got from CBO, Congressional Budget Office, in Wisconsin, 276,175. Let me say that number again. 276,175 fellow Wisconsinites are going to lose health care in the state of Wisconsin. I'm no whiz at statistics, but the chances are If you're not one of those 276,000 plus, you're going to know somebody who is. Might be your grandparents, your mom, your neighbor. This, unfortunately, will haunt us here in Wisconsin. And the only recourse, assuming there are midterm elections, and that is not a given, is to get out and vote.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee on June 7th presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's independence resolution word for word. Resolved that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tyler Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along. Zomer's on the board. 22 now, past the hour of 2 o'clock on a Thursday, July 3rd, 2025. We're going to get back to the budget federally in just a moment. And coming up after the bottom of the hour, Civic Media's political editor, founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer, will be along. Have a half an hour discussion on the state budget. Lots of breaking news. Would be remiss if we didn't mention this other breaking news, very important, particularly for listeners on WAUK in southeast Wisconsin, but I think bears mentioning, of course, here statewide. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, great reporting by Sophie Carson and Claudia Levins, one person was shot and killed and two others were shot during the early morning hours today, including a Shorewood police officer who was struck in his ballistic vest and treated and released from a hospital. I want to make clear this is Shorewood in the Milwaukee area. I know there's another Shorewood municipality here in Dane County. This is the Shorewood in the southeast part of the state. Back to the story, the person who died was an adult woman, according to the Milwaukee County Medical Examiner's Office. Officials have not revealed the condition of the other person shot in Shorewood. Police were searching for a suspect before an apparent chase began, ending in the Halliard Park neighborhood of Milwaukee later in the morning. Medical examiners said they responded to that scene and indicating that someone had died. Other reporting is that the accused or alleged shooter
had died at that scene. It's still a fluid situation. We'll continue to update that as it becomes available here at Civic Media. But again, a shooting this morning in Shorewood in southeast Milwaukee. And more reporting that there was a mass shooting, at least 4 people killed in Chicago. 24 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. Back to this federal budget being passed about an hour ago. The ramifications thereof. According to Bernie Sanders, over 246,000 people in Wisconsin will lose their health care coverage. 276,000 plus after Donald Trump signs it tomorrow. 855-752-4842. Let's go to the phone lines. Tom in McFarland, listening on WMDX on the line. Tom, thanks for calling. Let's see you.
Thanks for taking my call. And, you know, just talking about those Medicaid cuts and how people are going to lose their insurance, I was talking with a couple of MAGA friends who are on BadgerCare, and they're saying that, well, they're already working, and they see nothing wrong with the work requirements that are going to be put into place. They think that's actually a good thing until I pointed out to them that the way that they're going to lose their insurance, and they're going to lose their insurance, is because the federal state or federal budget reduces the amount of money that's going to be sent back to the states to cover the cost of Medicaid.
Correct.
States are going to have to make up those costs, and they won't have the funds. So what's going to happen is they're going to have to increase the eligibility. So right now, for BadgerCare. After this goes through, you are no longer going to be eligible for that BadgerCare.
Right.
That's how most of these people are going to lose their insurance. And they were gobsmacked when I pointed out to them that that's how it's going to happen. And you know, I wish I could say that I you know, thoughts and prayers.
Right.
But they were warned. I was telling them prior to the election that this is what they were going to do. And they didn't believe. So at least those illegal immigrants won't get it.
Yeah. As he says facetiously. I get that. No, I mean, there's a lot of finding out going on and about to happen across this country right now. The other thing is, and some of this is still fluid, as I understand it, people are going to have to file for eligibility instead of once a year, twice a year. So you have all that extra paperwork and all that bureaucracy and the cost on top of that. So, you know, and someone who spent a few months on BadgerCare, it ain't easy. So I get it. So thanks, Tom. I appreciate the call. 855-752-4842. Let's go up to beautiful Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley. Oh, Gene in Eau Claire, WCFW The Tap. Gene, thanks for calling. We'll see you.
Well, thank you so much for covering this. This is just outstanding. I watched the whole thing, and I thought, oh, man, I hope these guys play some of those clips, because I hope people get a chance to watch it, because it was really informative, and all of the different amendments that different people offered to try to protect the people in the United States, and they were just turned down, and all of them were very significant. And then also there was a little bit of religion thrown in there. I'm glad that he did that. It was like
Hakeem Jeffries, you're talking about, the Democratic leader of the House, yes.
Yes, and it was just great, you know, where they wear the crosses and, you know, tell people how, you know, different things. And anyway, it was so great because he did burn up the Bible, and I used to teach Sunday school years ago, and you know where you're supposed to close, you know, the people and stuff. So if you get a chance, also brought up Project 2025 at the very end of the speech, and you can find it probably on public television, you know, on Roku if you go through that. But anyway, thank you very much, and
appreciate
the great work, and I hope you have a good weekend.
Yep, have a great 4th of July weekend. Let's go quickly to Mark in Perdue Stack. Mark, about 45 seconds, it's yours. What say you?
Yeah, well, in honor of the holiday coming up, in recognition of our Declaration of Independence, I'll remind people that in the Declaration it includes this line: a prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Now, there's a little bit of change there. You know, the leader of a free people is more apparent. But Donald Trump is trying to be a tyrant.
Yeah.
And in every case, he is what the anti-federalists were worried about, surrounded by minions and mistresses, and now with his ICE troops going out there murdering Jane Essers.
Appreciate the call, Mark. Yep, thank you very much, Mark. Yeah, that's something that's not getting a lot of play either, that the ICE budget, the budget for Homeland Security, ICE, it is 5 times larger. It really is Donald Trump's own police force, if you will. And I haven't been able to confirm this because there's been so much going on. So I want to say that I've not confirmed this, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Maybe somebody can point me to a confirmation from a reliable source. But there seems to be language in this bill that also abdicates part of Congress's ability to control things to the executive, to Donald Trump. If that turns out to be true, Katie, bar the door. Back after this on the Civic Media Ready Network with Dan Schaefer talking about the state budget that passed and even signed into law. What does it mean for his re-election bid? Don't go anywhere on the Civic Media Ready Network.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin is ranked second in the nation for having the most organic farms. Now, the Food Finance Institute is looking to help these organic growers with a new program called Naturally Wisconsin. I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report along with you on a Thursday. The program essentially seeks to boost the market for organic products. Jamie Valenti-Jordan is the Food Brand Program Manager with the Food Finance Institute. He tells us about the types of businesses or services that can work with Naturally Wisconsin.
Within our space, of course, we have brands. That's the most commonly recognized group. But it's not just emerging brands, not just established brands. It's also our supply chain up and downstream. So that's going to be inclusive of our agricultural sector, our agricultural supply, our ag tech, but also our ingredient suppliers that are going to process those materials, our packaging and equipment suppliers that are going to be a part of that as well, all the way through to our service providers, those that specialize in the food industry with respect to, working on legal or marketing as well.
Jamie Valenti-Jordan says you can learn more about Naturally Wisconsin by visiting the Food Finance Institute online. Stick around for more agribusiness news coming your way.
In my County Farm Bureau, I'm more than a member. I'm an advocate for local farms and families. Serving on the board has given me a chance to create real change in our community. From organizing volunteer opportunities to promoting agriculture at local events, we connect our neighbors to the farms that feed them. Together, we're building a stronger and well-informed community. Join us and make a difference today.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture, Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
All business owners want the same thing, to make their business succeed. At Rural Mutual, they help that happen. As the third largest writer of commercial business in Wisconsin, they take the time to learn your business so they can properly protect you. Call your local agent today or visit ruralmutual.com.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
In other agribusiness news on a Thursday, local food dollars are getting applause from food processors. In the budget agreement between the governor and the Republican-led legislature, $10 million has been secured toward the Food Security Initiative grant program. This is through the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. The Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association says it's going to increase access to nutritious dairy products like milk and cheese, as well as meat, fruits, and vegetables from Wisconsin food processors during a time when food banks are seeing record demand. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be a hot and humid couple of days. Today, sunny with a chance of an isolated thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Our high today, 88. Tonight, upper 60s. The 4th of July will be sunny, hot, and humid with a high of 91. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 89.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
I am sleeping in for the holiday on Friday, but if you're up and at 'em, I'll have some of our best segments from 2025 to get you set for the weekend.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man.
Milwaukee's best.
It's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity.
Hey man, what about Milwaukee, man?
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
And it lies between the pit of a man's fears and the summit of his knowledge.
What you think about Milwaukee?
This is the dimension of imagination. You are now entering the recombobulation area.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show and the recombobulation area. 35 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock on Thursday, July 3rd. That intro can only mean that one person is on the other side of that. A Milwaukeean, a lover of Summerfest, at least in smaller doses. And nobody is a bigger Bucks fan and a great political writer than our very own Civic Media political editor and founder of the recombobulation area, Dan Schaefer. Mr. Schaefer, good morning or a continued morning. Did you sleep at all last night?
I did sleep a little bit. It's a discombobulating day, perhaps, yes. To be covering politics in Wisconsin, watching the governor sign the bill for the budget at 1:32 a.m., I believe, was the exact time that signature hit the paper. So, yeah, lots going on in state politics and lots for us to discuss here.
Now, maybe I got my wires crossed. I didn't know that you were coming on to talk about politics. I thought you were coming here to talk about the big story this morning as being reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Pat Connaughton bids farewell to Milwaukee on an Instagram post. He's been traded to Charlotte.
That's right. A lot of moves for the Bucks this week. You know, as someone who lives at the intersection of sports, particularly NBA basketball and politics, this has been an incredibly newsworthy week. I'm gonna need some time to really recombobulate at the end of it. Here.
That's what Dan Schaefer's doing over the 4th of July weekend. All right, I kid. We're kidding. Well, the main reason we're here is to talk about the state budget. So you, Sholly Pittman, our news director, and Jimmy Cuska for our news department, all up last night. I had fallen asleep in my chair after trying to get through Colbert. The old man Todd couldn't do it. I woke up to reruns of Seinfeld about 1 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, well, look at that. But you guys stayed up. You did a great job at all of our Civic Media socials updating folks. Tell us what happened, Dan, at the end, and explain this rush to get the budget done.
Yeah, so obviously there's a little bit of political news happening today. So along with the state budget being signed in Madison, the so-called one big beautiful bill that Donald Trump was advancing through Congress also just passed in the House this afternoon, and there was a reason for the state of Wisconsin to pass this before the federal bill passed. It meant that it's kind of a complicated long story short is that they needed to pass this with a certain change involving some compensation for hospitals, involving some Medicaid reimbursement, and some federal dollars that the state would have missed out on had they not made this budget change before that bill was passed.
So if the Republican caucus and Hakeem Jeffries are there pooping a group, and if Hakeem Jeffries, or Johnson, that is, and if Hakeem Jeffries hadn't held the floor for 8 hours, if this thing in D.C. had passed first and Trump put his signature on it, then Wisconsin would have lost out on millions of dollars of available money to help essentially hospitals and reimbursement.
Yeah, about $1 billion, a little over $1 billion, I believe, would have been at risk. And, you know, never mind that Republicans in the state have been denying Medicaid expansion for more than a decade now, which would bring about $1 billion every budget cycle to the state of Wisconsin. Never mind the logic of that. But I think that added some urgency and some of what I was hearing as the budget process was unfolding in Madison last night was that they were watching what was happening in D.C. too, as there was some certain delays. So I think it was, you know, ended up being about 12 hours after Tony Evers signed his budget that the federal budget passed in the House. So everything was on a pretty tight timeline here. You know, it kind of frustrating, really, though, if you zoom out and talk about it, what's been happening in the state budget discussions for weeks and weeks and weeks. They've just been going in circles and going in circles. And as I reported here about this same time with you last Friday on the Todd Alba show, that Dianne Hesselbein, the Senate Democratic Minority Leader, was finally invited to the table because Republicans did not have the votes to pass the budget with only Republican votes.
Yeah.
So, you know, adding her to negotiations, I don't know why it took so long to do that, but, you know, it eventually did and things moved quickly. Once she joined negotiations and you know, Evers announced the deal, what was it, Tuesday morning, voted on it yesterday into the wee hours of the night, and now here we are on Thursday with a state budget.
Talking to Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area. You can find all of his work both at civicmedia.us. Great story by Dan, Shelley Pittman, Jimmy Cusk, our entire team breaking down this budget. Civicmedia.us, find it there. And also all of his work at www.therecombobulationarea.news. Type it correctly.
You got it.
You'll get it right there. For those nuts of us like us who follow this political stuff, I always like the parlor game of winners and losers. And let's start politically, and then let's go policy-wise and Wisconsinites. You brought up the first one, I think, Dianne Hesselbein, State Senator Dianne Hesselbein, Democratic leader in the Senate, winner.
Absolutely a winner in this. You know, even people who are really frustrated with this budget, and there are a lot of Democrats in the state legislature who are frustrated with this budget, people are really have a high opinion of the work that Dianne Hesselbein did to get this budget over the finish line. You know, it has been a pretty long time since they have invited any legislative Democratic leaders to the table in any kind of budget negotiations. And, you know, that she was invited last week and made a number of changes. I think, you know, some of what I'm hearing that she has been credited for is the increases in funding for the UW system, the increases in special education reimbursement rates, and a number of the kind of one-time capital projects that emerged to get this budget over the finish line, too. A lot of those within the UW system, but also, you know, a number of projects in a variety of different municipalities and counties as well. So, yeah, a lot of people have a really, really high opinion of the work that Dianne Hesselbein did once she was invited to the table for this budget.
Where the votes lied for the Democrats, those who crossed over and voted for this, I mean, La Crosse seemed to have a disproportionate amount of state legislators on the Democratic side vote for this. And, you know, we talked about this story in The Hill yesterday at the federal level, Republican from U.S. Senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, she got called by one of the Democrats a cheap date because she sold out her vote on the federal budget for harpoons for fishers in Alaska. I mean, was Brad Paff a cheap date? And Steve Doyle over there in La Crosse, did they get enough for the UW system over there?
I think I forget the exact dollar amount, but I know that they got a big capital investment for a project on the UW La Crosse campus. So I know that was one of the big things that they talked about there. And yeah, you're right. Senator Brad Paff was among the five Senate Democrats who joined the majority of Republicans in the state Senate to pass the budget. You also had a couple people from the Fox Valley and Green Bay area and also Eau Claire who crossed over to pass the budget as well.
So are those Democrats that crossed over, and some of them are in kind of purple-ish districts? Are they winners then?
I would say so. I would say so because I think, you know, ultimately it was a budget that it needed to get passed in some form or another. And I think the inclusion of Senate Democrats in particular, I mean, Assembly Democrats, they were not at the negotiating table. It's a little bit of a different dynamic largely there. But I think Senate Democrats being able to get a number of things that were that are seen as really big wins in this budget. There are a number of things that I think people, you know, we can talk about some of the losers in this as well.
I was just going to say, yeah, go ahead.
But I think the Senate Democrats really have emerged as probably the big winner in this budget.
On the other side of the aisle, Majority Leader, Republican Leader Devin Lemieux, and Senate President Mary Fleskowski.
At odds, very much at odds in this process. Fleskowski was one of the four Republican state senators to vote against this budget. She gave a pretty impassioned speech decrying Governor Evers in this process as well. But I think, I forget the exact details, but J.R. Ross from Wisp Politics pointed out that this was the first time in a really long time that a Senate,
ever.
You know, majority leader and Senate president of the same party were on opposite sides of a budget vote. So that was pretty interesting, too. And I think it also shows that there is a little bit of disarray. You know, Robin Voss might have his assembly caucus pretty much in line, but there's definitely some disarray among Senate Republicans. That's for sure.
Agreed. Let's go to the assembly. Speaker Robin Voss, winner or loser?
I think he has to be seen as a winner, as much as it pains me to say it.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of the assembly speaker, but I think he got a lot of what he was looking for in this budget. He was really driving the conversation for a lot of it, and he seemed pretty pleased with the budget as it was signed and as he kind of wrapped things up right before that final vote. Only losing one Republican vote in this to Scott Allen of Waukesha, who will vote against Voss from time to time, but really only losing that one vote and getting a lot of the priorities that they wanted in the budget passed, including that tax cut that they had been talking about over and over and over. About every speech from a Republican assembly member as I was watching Into the Wee Hours last night was about a tax cut.
Governor Tony Evers, winner or loser? I ask you, Dan Schaefer.
I would say it's a little bit more mixed when it comes to Tony Evers. I think there are aspects of the budget that can be seen as a huge win for Evers, particularly childcare. I think Evers really went to bat for that issue. You've talked about this on the show over the last few weeks, how he was saying that he's not going to sign a budget unless there is funding for childcare. So I think that aspect of it was really strong from Evers. But I think he also approached this budget the same way as he has for the last three budget cycles. And I think recognizing the leverage that Democrats had with needing Democratic votes in the Senate to get this over the finish line, I think Evers could have approached this process a little bit differently. And I think that's why you're seeing some of the consternation from legislative Democrats, particularly those in the Assembly, many of whom voted against this budget. And I think that, you know, it's a story of missed opportunities as far as a number of people are concerned with what is being ultimately delivered in this budget. So I think they're, you know, it's a mixed results, I think, when it comes to the governor here.
I want to get to the assembly Democrats in particular who are strong nosed and trying to lobby people to call their state legislators in a minute. But before I get to that, Dan, well, let's have you speak to this for a minute on to your point that there's a lot of people that said, well, why did Evers, their words, not mine, cave in on some of this stuff, not hold the line on K-12 education? But I kind of was like, look, I mean, there is a point, because I've been in the room with Robin Voss, my former boss, where he'll just say, thank you very much, we're done here, and walk away.
I like your Voss impression, by the way.
I've seen it. Thank you. But I mean, he's very polite, but he's just very firm. And I think that, you know, I don't think this is a great budget at all. But I think maybe it was the best that could be done under the circumstances. What do you think?
I think you're right about that. I mean, this is, you know, Robin Voss controls the Republicans control. This is the nature of divided government, right? You're not going to get everything that everybody wants. It's going to be a purple budget. But I think the difference of this budget from the last few that Tony Evers have signed, the last three Republican budgets that Tony Evers have signed and taken, you know, at times some creative approaches to the line item veto and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think not recognizing the leverage that they had in the state Senate until really last week when Dianne Hasselbein was invited to negotiations, I think they should have brought her in much, much earlier.
I agree that they should include Democrats earlier in the process as well. When we come back, we're going to play a little John McLaughlin with Dan Schaefer. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all, 10 being metaphysical certainty that he will run again, does Tony Evers run for a third term? We will ask Dan Schaefer on the other side, and I will give you the correct answer. Don't go anywhere. It's the Off-Ball Show on Civic Media.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The website climate.gov is no more. The site that served as a trusted resource for federal research on climate change has been officially shut down a month after its staff was fired by the Trump administration. When it was online, climate.gov received hundreds of thousands of visitors every month. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says climate information will be housed elsewhere on its website. $16 million in state funding could soon be on the way to help farmers improve water quality in rural Wisconsin. The Joint Committee on Finance recently committed the funding for a host of environmentally-minded farm programs after months of work from Clean Wisconsin and its partners. The funding still needs to be passed by the full legislature and signed into law by Governor Evers. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
An unsuspecting driver at a Milwaukee barbershop.
I got an apprentice here shadowing me. I'll put this hot towel on, man. About a good 3 minutes, all right?
The apprentice is Donald Driver.
So when you come here, you drive?
Yes.
Your car got seatbelts?
Yeah.
You wear them?
No.
Okay, but why not?
I don't want to.
But do you know you can get a ticket for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a ticket. Bet you wish you buckle up now.
Oh, my God.
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Take it, click it. There we go.
Click it or tick it.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways. Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Show on the Civic Media Radio Network across Wisconsin. It's 25. Try that again, Todd. It is 8 minutes. My clock is off today. My clock is off. How about Schaefer's? 8 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock. Gonna play a little What's Worse on the other side today, a 4th of July edition. Sparklers or firecrackers? We'll talk about that in hour two. But right now, back into political conversation with Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer, joining us live from Milwaukee. Nobody's more Milwaukee than Dan Schaefer. That's my opinion. We love it when you're here, Dan.
All right. Milwaukee, absolutely.
You should be. It's a great city. Those of us old enough to remember the old McLaughlin Group television show, he'd have a panel. And at the end, he'd ask a question on a scale of 1 to 10. And he'd call people's names out for a brief answer. He'd say, Pat Buchanan. Eleanor Clift, Chris Matthews. So, in John McLaughlin style, I'm going to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no chance at all, 10 being metaphysical certainty that he runs for a third term, does Tony Evers run again? I ask you, Dan Schaefer.
Well, obviously, I have had a bit of a say on this matter. As you know, I wrote a column about why I think Tony Evers should not run for a third term. You know, as I was writing that piece, I was asking people what they were thinking if he was going to run again. And I think that the feedback that I was getting was that he was genuinely had not yet decided and was going to decide after the state budget. Here we are the day after the state budget was signed. I guess I'll go with a 6. I think it's more of a 50-50 chance, but I guess I would lean slightly towards him running again. Because I do think, you know, he has approached the last budget process and all of that, saying that, you know, with an eye towards running again, it does seem like that's the direction that things are headed. But I would not be surprised either way.
The correct answer?
How's that squishy middle ground answer?
The correct answer is 2. Tony Evers has put in his time in the public service, 3 terms as a school superintendent, state school superintendent, 2 terms as governor. I think that he is going to call it a win. And the main reason I say that, Dan Schaefer, is, in my opinion, this is not a budget you go run for re-election on. Because the cuts to K-12 education or the lack of funding, $500 million for special ed, that's great. But there are school districts, larger ones like Eau Claire, going to lose $2 million next biennium. And there are smaller ones that are going to be really devastated. He's going to lose the K-12 pro-education voting base. Those people, they're not going to vote for Tom Tiffany. But I think they stay home if he runs again. He can't politically afford that. I think he was just ready to be done with this. He was ready to sign pretty much anything. And I think he's out of here.
That's an interesting point, and I do think there are, you know, if we're going back to kind of the winners and losers of the budget and all of that, there are a lot of people in the public education space who are especially upset with the governor's budget and with this compromise. And, you know, we heard it in all of the speeches, from especially from Assembly Democrats last night, talking about how the lack of, lack of funding for public schools in this budget is going to lead to more and more of the wave of referendums that we've been seeing. So yeah, I do think, you know, I do wonder if Evers approached this like one last, uncomfortable compromise right. Before he doesn't run for a third term, or if this is, kind of the opposite end of the thing would be saying, hey, you know, he people like bipartisanship, people, you know, like a governor who gets things done. And is that the, you know, line that Evers would bring? You know, hard to say.
Do you see that pathetic signing last night? It was like him alone in an askew tie. It looked like he woke up from a nap, but he signs it with 3 people in his office. It was like AJ Biaport and a couple of the people were the only ones there.
Right.
I mean, that's not something you run on, Dan. You don't. I mean, if you're going to run again, you do this. You know, you force some of these Democrats to stand behind you, and you say this is only a start. I am calling the legislature back in to refund this, and quickly to this point. Listen to Jane Mattner's show. They brought this up this morning with a child care worker. The child care provision, the funding that's in here, it's only for 1 year.
A big chunk of the child care changes really only extends the child care counts type funding for another year. I think that there's a lot of confusion with that. Another piece that Evers issued a partial veto. He issued 23 partial vetoes as he signed that budget around 1:30 a.m. last night. One of those was to remove the deadline to close the Green Bay Correctional.
Yes.
That was a big thing that people brought up in negotiations, too. So instead of having the 2029, I believe, deadline to close, he removed that deadline. And so now know there is not a set date for that. I think that has a lot of people I've seen on both sides of the aisle frustrated with that decision as well.
Many thanks to the great Angela Lang tuning in on X for giving us that tidbit reminder as well. She's always great, whatever she's all today, and other people across this network. About a minute or so left, Dan Schaefer. Any final thoughts on the state budget? Or can Wisconsinites take a little bit of a summer vacation over the holiday weekend now? Is there any big breaking news that's going to happen?
Todd, now you just jinxed it. Now you just—I was going to say if you didn't say anything there, right? I say we get a couple days to celebrate with our family and friends for the 4th of July weekend. But now that you said something, Todd, now I think that we're going to get hit with another tidal wave of news or something like that.
I'll be traveling with my Starlink setup just in case something happens over the holiday. What does the Schaefer family do over the 4th weekend?
We're staying in Milwaukee for the 4th this weekend. It's the best time of year to be in Milwaukee is summer in Milwaukee, and we're looking forward to watching some fireworks at our neighborhood on the west side of town here. Probably going to Washington Park to watch those fireworks and eating lots of good food, having a few adult beverages, and enjoying ourselves.
What's your favorite brat?
There's so many good ones in Milwaukee. I'll go with the Usinger's Italian.
I just had a Usinger's hot dog out of the grill. It was very, very good. Dude, Usinger's, a great place there in Milwaukee. Nothing more Milwaukee than Dan Schaefer, host. Why do I keep saying that? The political editor of Civic Media, also a Recombobulation area. Dan Schaefer, thank you so much. Have a great day down there.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Be well.
Dan, remember this. If you have a 5th of the 4th, don't go 4th of the 5th. Back after this.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Republicans cheering after passing the massive mega bill. The vote 218 to 214, with two Republicans joining Democrats to vote against the mega bill that stalled in both the House and Senate due to deep cuts to Medicaid and other programs that will offset tax breaks for the wealthy. GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson says in the end, Congress and the White House were unified.
We had a vision for what we wanted to do as a group. We believed in the election cycle last fall that we were going to be given this great blessing of unified government.
President Trump also declaring victory. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
The press secretary posting victory because this is a huge win for President Trump. I mean, this could be the most consequential piece of legislation that President Trump signs for the rest of his term, and he will be taking a victory lap later today. He's going to Iowa, and that is going to be part of the process of selling this bill to the American public.
He'll also sign the bill tomorrow on July 4th. This is ABC News.